Hi there, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Robert Winters.
I'm Judy Nathans.
Yeah, and let's see, today is Tuesday, January 18th, 2022.
I actually know, remarkably,
you know, you always said when you like write a check or something, you always put the wrong year. It takes
first
a while.
The first check I write, I always write 21.
I'm almost perfect so far.
Well, actually, writing 2022, now that you say checks, very few people, and even me, even write checks. So they're probably talking to them saying, what are they doing?
Yeah. Well, I've actually seen even some in this, like the city calendars, you know, when people are entering an upcoming event, they've messed up the year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, right. You know, it's sort of like there's been a...
It is common.
Yeah. There's been some, you know, council-related meeting been going on for a little over a year now, according to that. So anyway, it's kind of funny. So anyway, one rather delightful piece of news that came out yesterday in a press release out of the city manager's office was the appointment of Christine Elo as police commissioner. No more acting, right? Christine has left the theater. She's no longer acting. Yeah. She's now the regular police commissioner.
Yeah.
You know, I always like it. They always put it in the press with the permanent police commissioner. I don't think this is permanent. You're not wedded to this.
She didn't leave, right? Acting. We could say she's not the understudy anymore. She's a full-time actor. So that's
right.
Good.
You know, she's the lead. Yeah. No, and
she didn't leave the theater. She's right there in the middle of all.
Yeah.
Of
everybody I know is really happy about it.
Homegrown, raised here.
And including former city managers who are speaking happily about this outcome. I mean, in addition to just being a really great candidate who's exactly the right person at the right time, I think the fact that it's a person who is sort of homegrown.
I just said that. You don't listen.
Yeah, anyway. I think that's a really significant thing.
I believe she lives in Cambridge.
I believe she's still living here. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because that's even unusual there. A lot.
Yeah. It was very controversial back about 30 years ago when they moved from having a police chief to a police commissioner, right? A civilian police commissioner, right? I mean, still wear the uniform and all, but.
What do you mean a civilian?
You don't have to come up through the ranks, graduate from, you know, to patrol officer to sergeant, lieutenant, superintendent, captain.
You don't have to have been in any police force.
You don't have to be. Of course, it would be ridiculous to make somebody police commissioner who wasn't. But you know, but it was a civilian position, and then they brought in Perry Anderson as police commissioner, and at the time it was a very partisan. Change. There were many of the people within the Cambridge Civic Association were strong advocates of moving from a police chief to a police commissioner. Mm-hmm. I have to admit, at the time, I didn't really fully appreciate. I still don't fully appreciate the distinction, quite honestly. And many of the old-time independents definitely did not want to go that direction. So it was a vote was taken to kind of move in that direction. And then they brought in Perry Anderson, who was not part of the Cambridge police force. He was brought in from the outside. And, you know, and there was resentment, I think it's fair to say, amongst some in the ranks that they were, you know, who's this guy, right? We're probably on our fourth or fifth. I think it was Perry Anderson, Ronnie Watson. There was Bob Haas.
Ramble Bard came from outside.
Well, they all did. Ronnie came from Chicago. Perry was, I think, out of Florida. Branville was Philadelphia, I think.
So did resentment then die down about someone not coming through the ranks?
It's simply become the norm now. You know, I think it was a tough transition.
So it's really good now that
I think it's a sign of the maturation of the process that now we're actually bringing somebody in from within the ranks and nobody's complaining about it. right?
Well, but also she's a woman, which is wonderful.
I think that's great too. Yeah. Sends exactly the right message throughout.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, if this was 20 something years ago and they were bringing somebody up through the ranks, there would have been some people raising issues about it, which
I
don't appreciate.
It goes back and forth like that. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's, I like to think that the police department itself is sort of matured to the point where it made sense. I mean, I remember when, I think it was when Ronnie Watson was commissioner. I could be wrong about this, but I think it was when Ronnie Watson was in there and said, when I leave here, you won't even have to ask whether it would be okay to have the next commissioner come from the ranks.
Wow.
Right. It didn't actually happen right away, but that was certainly the goal expressed by former police commissioners, is that at some point you won't have to look outside because you're going to be very happy with everybody in the command staff.
So in your knowledge, who has been the longest serving police chief slash commissioner?
Know that, and I actually don't remember.
Is it common to have the same person more than a few years?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, and years gone by when it was police chief, it would could have lasted a very, very long time.
Okay.
Sure.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. All
you right. know, but, you know, it's, you know, I don't know. I don't know what else to say really about it, but yeah. I think suffice to say that this has been greeted with glee and general appreciation.
I know. Isn't it nice? Refreshing. Yeah. Okay. Good.
It is refreshing. Yeah. You know, and I think it's a sort of a good person. You know, there's still some discussions to come. Perhaps as part of the upcoming budget process about some reconfiguration
whole,
of
the whole
alternate public, police models. And
what do you call
I think, I think we're actually in a pretty good starting point now for that discussion, you know, with this now in place. And so I'm happy to see it.
Okay. You know?
So anyway, so I thought that was sort of big news and definitely worth mentioning.
Yes.
Another piece of I think, we, you know, it's kind of become routine, but there's no way to avoid speaking of it, is the plague, right? And 2 weeks ago, when we had our last shows, you know, there were all these indications that things were moving in a positive direction in terms of COVID infection rates and whatever.
Yeah.
And in fact, that's actually been, that's been the case in a big way, actually. Mm-hmm. I thought actually maybe not to obsess on this topic too much, but
we always like to see your screen. Yeah.
Yeah. And, but I do want to sort of point out that when we had our last show, that was, you know, on January 4th, that was pretty much what we would say in the mathematics world, a point of inflection. You saw that there was the rate was actually not only, the rate was actually increasing, and it was right around then when it actually started to turn a corner and heading more toward leveling off.
So again, that first date is December 3rd of 2021?
At the very beginning, this is only,
that's what I mean,
So from early December until about a month later, things were actually rapidly increasing.
Sure.
And then they continue to increase.
Yeah, right, the holidays,
Right, but then what you're starting to see now is a much slower rate of increase. In fact, today, rather pleasantly, you know, we had our 7-day average went up as high as 376.6 on January 9th. It dipped below 200, so we're down to 190. 197.6 right now, which is really great news. And again, just to kind of see where the actual 7-day averages have been heading, you know, they apparently peaked at around January 9th. Mm-hmm. And then ever since then, it's just been dropping in a very, very nice way.
Can you go to that middle graph right there? This one?
Which one?
The one, right?
This one?
That one.
It's that was from the...
Right, but on the news, they were talking about the hockey stick image, and that you can see that right there, because in that last part where it goes
when when we were all in a panic in April May of 2020, is now it just seems like ancient history. And
I know
flip.
Can you imagine?
Right, then last winter was notable, and that seemed like a lot at the time, and then the Delta phase, and then the most recent Omicron phase, which has just been hysterically off the charts.
Because it's
and
so
now,
contagious.
Yeah, right, and when you
days,
stretch that out and take a closer look, you can see how now that's relaxing its way down
to
reasonability again.
Okay.
Another thing worth mentioning here is that when you actually look at the infections by age group, they had all spiked and now they're all dropping.
Oh, that's good to know.
And they're doing so in a very, very consistent way. I've actually been starting to look at the wastewater graphs pretty regularly. This is the one from the MWRA. Yes. And that spike occurred at pretty much around the beginning of the year, January 1st. And now it's just dropping just as fast as it rose.
So good to see that.
Yeah. And that's what everybody seems to suggest is that's a very major leading indicator about where things are headed.
Right, because it shows it's a predictor rather than this is what is right now. It's sort of
Exactly.
And also they say because people are doing home tests, which are not recorded. So therefore you don't know what the results are, but you cannot... Everyone uses the toilet.
Exactly, right.
So it's a really good, honest, accurate measure. way to do it. Yeah.
Exactly. So anyway, that's I view this as unqualified good news. I do have to point out though that 4 days ago, three or 4 days ago, there was a death, and today there was another recorded death. So,
right, so it's 130 now.
Yeah, as what they often say is that the positive tests are the wastewater seems to give me the first indicator that something's happening, and then that's followed by positive tests being recorded, and then that is followed by rises in hospitalizations.
Or
just general sickness, even if it's not requiring hospitalization because of all the vaccinations, thank God. And then there are, some hospitalizations lead in death. So that tends to be sort of the lagging measure of things. So it wouldn't be at all surprised if there could still be some additional fatalities, but the fact is all the other leading indicators have all suggested that in fact we're moving to a very good place. And when you talk to people who are in business community, hotel industries and you name it, they're all starting to feel pretty optimistic right now, right across the board. It is kind of strange in a way that, there's all this controversy about vaccinations and passports and whatever, but by the time all of those rules fully are implemented, we may actually be saying, well, that's nice as a backup, but.
It's interesting you're so positive because to me, this was a variant and there'll be another one, but maybe it will be less and less, but I feel like there's still things to come. I mean, I think everything we're doing though is helping with that.
I think part of the reason why variants are spawned is because there's a lingering sense of the pandemic. One of the blessings in a kind of a twisted way of having a rapid spread like Omicron is that it comes and it goes and it doesn't linger as long. So consequently-
And more people get it, more people get some kind of immunity, who knows?
Right, you know? but it also means that there's less lag time to allow for development
for more mutations.
Of new variant. Exactly.
I forgot about that part. The less lag, that means it can't get that more virulence.
Yeah.
That's a good sign. Okay.
It's a great sign, actually.
All right, now I feel better. Thank you.
Right. But I also want to point out that, technically speaking, the Spanish flu, as they called it back in 1918-19, that's still with us.
I know.
Has simply been making little variations.
That's true.
And it's been going on for a century.
I know. So, wish people would just do a little more, knowledge seeking instead of
So there's inevitably a transition from pandemic to endemic. Yes. And we're kind of maybe seeing that start to happen. It's been 100 years, so it's not like there's a lot of fresh memory of how these things play out. But even the Spanish flu. It had peaks and peaks. And then the biggest, most deadly peak was actually later in the game, partly because people coming back from the war, so there was a lot of movement around the planet,
which is actually where it actually started, they think, in the military, but it happened given the Spanish flu.
So, everybody's paying attention and a lot of this is going to go into the history books and people will look for these kinds of patterns and help to understand in fields
of public health. Robert, you don't fly anywhere. You don't actually do anything like that. But I've heard someone saying the other day, maybe it was one of the experts, that they'll probably always see people masked in airports. That might be a thing now, which is, That's well, okay. And even on an airplane, you know.
And I think I've mentioned this in the past, is that it was one of the things that always kind of confused and surprised me.
Yeah.
How around Kendall Square in MIT, there were a lot of people of Chinese ancestry who probably
were always wearing
yeah. masks. I said, what are these people, germ happy? You know, I got all snotty.
No, they had SARS affect them.
Yeah. So the thing is, that, you know, psychologically, you certainly felt that this was in your best interest.
Right.
To do it. Right. I didn't understand that at the time.
Yeah.
But now, you know, I won't be at all surprised if we'll see masks on lingering on people, whether they need it or not, for a good long while.
And, well, you know, good for them. I'm not going to go into a shop. I haven't gone anywhere inside without a mask. I just haven't.
Yeah.
Unless it's someone's house where I know, and that's very rare there too. But
yeah,
just common. And now that it's cold, we've talked about this, it's kind of keeps you warmer anyway.
Right. but I'm looking for this to wind itself down. So
yeah, okay, that's positive. All right. So let's
So one thing that has happened since our last get together here was we actually did have a regularly scheduled meeting beyond the mayoral
election. On January 10th, right.
January 10th. And you know, again, you should never expect to see all sorts of, you know, big things happening on a first regular business meeting of a new elected body.
There was a lot of stuff around the, 82 people had signed up for public comments.
Yeah, I mean, there was still some of the lingering issues from the previous term that haven't gone away, but probably most notably, the lingering controversy of the North Massachusetts Avenue bike lanes. And really, this is Porter up to Dudley, I believe, the segment where, which we, actually, I'm a little unsure about this, because I know that there's part of this.
It's to the Alewife line. It's to the line there.
Right. So some of this has been explained to me. But now it's Dudley down toward Porter Square. And there's also simultaneously... there's a reconfiguration within Porter Square that has some public meeting coming up as well. And it's largely driven by the desire to reconfigure the way the bicycle throughput works in Porter Square.
Yeah.
Right. So, I think one of the things that came out of the January 10th City Council meeting was some revised language for
the charter policy that were made subject to
the charter right from the last term,
right?
About this, and I think there was a desire to have some new mechanism for a little bit more community input and back and forth
from before actual businesses, not just business prior associations, but actual businesses that were affected.
Yeah, so it's prior to implementation,
right?
I mean, the ordinance, for better or worse, or whether it should have been written this way or not, is another question. But for what it is, if city departments are feeling obliged to carry this out because of the way the ordinance is written. The notion that you just sort of, you know, plow on through with relatively minimal community feedback or even input, that was kind of been a big issue, right? Now, I was talking to one of the counselors the other day about it. I said, well, is there actually any hope for some sort of compromise that people can live with here? You know, I'd heard some rumor out of the Porter Square listserv that there were some people who were kind of pressing some alternatives and whatever. I mean, it's a little tough. You know, the constraints are very tough to work with when you're going to say, we're going to dedicate an entire lane each way to buses, plus we're going to dedicate.
Wait a minute. I have not read the cycle safety ordinance. Does it say in there that buses can never share a lane with bikes?
No, it doesn't. And in fact, the cycle safety ordinance doesn't have anything in it about buses.
Because that is, I'm sorry, I go into Watertown a lot, or Belmont, you know, and Boston. It should be a share. You don't have to dedicate a whole separate lane all the time.
Right. Or you could at least have for sections where the parking is pretty essential. Maybe that would be a good alternative.
There's so many ways that, I have to bring this up because I was just there today and I've been there a lot. The section from Putnam Avenue, and I know that we've got flex from Putnam Avenue to like where the post, before the post office, before the annex, on the right side, there's no place to pull over for anything. There's no space. It's one lane and there's restaurants there. Yep. There, where do they get their delivery? And then today I saw people parked briefly somewhere else where they were blocking cars. You had to go around them because
I every single time.
That's dangerous.
Yeah. Well, it's as dangerous as any two-lane country road. Basically, they've turned.
Do people think that we're going to not have cars or deliveries anywhere on our streets?
I think what they did in the section, you know, sort of from City Hall, heading up toward
that doesn't work. I'm sorry.
I think they did it badly.
Very badly.
And it's every single time I go through there, I have to, at some point or another, drive drive into the oncoming traffic lane, right? You know, obviously I wait to make sure there's no car coming straight at me, but I have to do that. You know, I don't think I ever crossed the double yellow line ever on Mass Ave, you know, in all the years I've lived here, but it's the only way to get through. If it's somebody is parking, they have to stop and pull in, so then that stops everything. If it's an Amazon delivery truck,
they're not parking on the right side. There are no parking spaces there at all.
There's a handful, you know.
But
one thing I think I feel like I should say though, that cycling safety ordinance notwithstanding, which certainly puts some rigidity on here.
Yeah,
I think you can't completely let off the hook some of the staff people who've been on the job for quite a few years now within the community development department, who are probably thrilled that this is happening because they have what began as basically the city's efforts to meet the requirements of the Clean Air Act and the state implementation plan in the wake of the parking freeze, you know, which led to the proliferation of the bike lanes in the first place. And the creation of the PTDM ordinance, you know, which is as an alternative to the parking freeze. There are city staff who basically have appointed themselves policymakers who, as far as I'm concerned, are perfectly thrilled to see any kind of obstruction to motor vehicles at all.
I don't know if they're so thrilled now. There's been such pushback from like so many people.
Yeah, that the pushback is falling on the shoulders of people like Joseph Barr from the traffic department, but it's not falling on some of those people within the community development department in the traffic and the environmental and transportation planning division who've basically been promoting this whole ideology for some time. You know? And I'm not going to let them off the hook anymore.
You know more than
honestly.
I do. So I don't know. Yeah.
You know that there's something a little too ideological about this, in my view, and I think not sufficiently practical, and certainly not democratic if you refuse to listen to people. You know, so I think it's a real problem. But one of the things that came out of the January 10th meeting was, that there would be they wanted to create a whole new committee that would be sort of advisory on this.
Right.
And then there was some scrambling among some city councilors to change the language to lean on existing committees having to do.
So who was promoting using existing committees?
Alana Mallon and a few others. I think they brought in some alternative language.
To speed up the process? Or
you could say it's to speed up the process, and I could certainly understand that argument because do you really need to create yet another committee, right? But, you know, if I felt that the existing committees, for example, Bicycle Committee and some of these ones here, were democratically operating, representative of people in the city, I would feel better about that. But I don't know that they are.
I mean,
I don't personally believe anyone can serve on the Cambridge Bicycle Committee unless they are in full agreement with the staff person who is in charge of it.
Well, I don't know that, but you've had your issues with the Transit Committee because you never got responses about your submission.
That's exactly right. You know, so I actually feel we have a problem within the community development department in that there are staff people there who feel that they're not accountable to anyone at all.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, and
also, one of the orders wanted the businesses or stakeholders to be involved in these committees.
Right.
Which, yeah. Did this so do that or not?
Well, you know, at some level, all you really need are one or two really strong, clear yes. voices to have right. all the influence you really need. Now, yes. there are some ways you can do alternative regulations, you know, uh-huh. so that you can have sort of dual use spaces, so it can be resident, but also, you know, people, yeah. you know, time limited.
Or certain times you can have resident permit, but yeah. only, visitors yeah. can do it 8 to 6 or something like that. They do that in other communities. We yeah. can do it here, yeah.
Now, I think there's also yeah. some options, at least this is what I've come to understand, mm-hmm. that there are actually quite a few, not quite a few, but there are at least some portions, not the whole stretch, but some stretch yeah. portions of the affected area in North Mass Ave where there are existing parking spaces behind mm-hmm. some of the street frontages. And if, in fact, an arrangement could be made between some of those property owners who have those control of actually a pretty substantial number of parking spaces that could be used for more generally, or maybe just during certain hours, you know.
But aren't those the ones they're putting meters on?
I'm talking about ones that are actually privately owned. So the city would actually have to sign some sort of arrangement with them.
Well, how would they be private? Oh, they're not on the street? They're like
they're not on the
driveways?
Street. No, they're off
oh,
streetways. Yeah.
They're like little parking
so,
lots.
Yeah, I so if you could pick yes. up, you know, 20 spaces here, you know,
that's a good idea. If there whatever, are any there, I don't know.
That, it could looked. Absorb, as long as there was yeah. some understanding with some of the business owners that, okay, yeah, the little signs that you can park behind Joe's shop over there or something like true. That, then yeah. maybe you can actually find at least some kind of a partial
if,
solution.
If there are those kind of spaces, my understanding is
there are some, a whole lot but, of, okay, but, here, but here's something to think about because that can yeah. only be viewed as a short-term yes. fix it because yeah. ultimately this, you know, you cannot run away from right. the fact that there is also not, simultaneously right. yes. a desire for densification along corridors, which mm. would basically turn a lot of those underutilized spaces and their parking ones into developable properties. And then all those parking spaces
well,
may very well go
future.
Away.
Well, that's
yeah, true. It may not be that far down right. the future though. Right. So okay. this may be have, good for now, but right. not forever. Okay. So anyway, so we got only a few seconds left
yeah,
here. So
we'll go into the charter reviews.
I'd like to talk a little bit about some charter yeah. stuff and okay. stuff in the next half hour. So
all
we'll
right.
see you then on
all right, we'll see you
Inside
then.
Side out.
Okay.